Welcome to Homeground. I'm Brian Kahn. For decades in American politics, contraception and abortion have been lightning rods of polarization. Both political parties come close to having litmus tests. Democratic candidates are almost always pro-choice. Republicans pro-life. The politics are hardball. This fall, Republicans in Congress came close to shutting down the government to prevent federal funds from going to Planned Parenthood, perhaps the nation's largest organization providing women's health care services, from sex education and health screening to contraception and abortion. The D.C. drama came after release of videos which purport to show Planned Parenthood staff discussing sale of fetal tissue for medical research purposes. Here to discuss all this is Martha Stahl, President and CEO of Planned Parenthood Montana. Martha, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground.
You're quite welcome.
Before we begin, I should mention that we've invited a pro-life organization to be on next week's program. Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
Sure. I was born in Vermont, and I grew up in central Connecticut and also throughout New England. My mom was a librarian. My parents are divorced, and my dad is a United Church of Christ minister and had churches all around New England when I was growing up.
So when you were growing up, were they divorced yet or not?
Yeah, they got divorced when I was five.
Okay. In terms of influences on you, what was your mom's, if you're looking back, what was your mom's influence on you?
Sure. So my mom graduated from college in the early 70s and always had around the house growing up Ms. Magazine and the old Our Bodies, Ourselves, which was a source of great interest to me as a preteen and a teenager, all the interesting information that was in there. And she was truly, and still is, I would say, a very strong feminist.
And Ms. Magazine, for those of our younger listeners, was a feminist magazine and pioneering.
Yes.
Fair. And how about your dad's influence?
As I mentioned, my dad was a United Church of Christ pastor, as was his brother. His brother's now retired. My dad still preaches in Maryland. And so I grew up in that church. And though my parents were divorced, my mom was also very active in the UCC church where she lived. And that church is, though it has puritanical roots.
Literally Puritans.
Literally Puritans, yes. Has a long progressive social action tradition and is quite a progressive congregation and is oftentimes very progressive beyond many other churches. So I grew up in that church, and one of my first volunteering experiences as a high school student was serving on the Mission Social Action Committee of our local church. That was in Plainville, Connecticut. And learn there sort of the intersection of issues around poverty and international development and healthcare and women's issues. So growing up in that church environment with that sort of sense of our obligation as Christians to help our fellow man and woman and see the connections between people and between all of these issues was really, really strong in my upbringing.
So that sounds like that combination might have influenced your choice of career.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I always knew that whatever I did would be in some way, some form of service. I think my dad would have liked to see me become a pastor, but...
Let me just ask you, I'm not familiar with a lot of different churches, and religion is one of the issues that makes the issue of contraception, termination of pregnancy, very controversial and emotional for many people. So the position of that church on those issues was what, if any?
Really, not a public position, but the understanding in that church really is that your relationship with God is your relationship with God. And so there is no intermediary between the person and God. And so the church doesn't necessarily take stances on social issues and really empowers and entrusts people and women as moral decision makers in their own lives that respects that relationship between the person and God. So related to the idea of abortion, the sense of women as moral decision makers who are intelligent and who can balance conflicting viewpoints and opinions and come to the right decision for themselves through thoughtfulness and prayer, it was sort of a given. There was no sense that somebody else should have a say in those decisions.
How about education? Where'd you go to school?
So I went to Sarah Lawrence College in Bronxville, New York for my undergrad.
Why have I heard of Sarah Lawrence College?
It is where Joseph Campbell taught for many years. I think people are probably pretty familiar with Follow Your Bliss and his writings.
Now, I'm thinking of Joseph Campbell as a guy that did a television series on myth of same person.
Yes, with Bill Moyers, yes. That's how many people know Sarah Lawrence. It's in Latin American studies.
Why Latin American studies for you?
For me, it was a great place to look at just what I was discussing earlier, sort of the intersections of social issues in people's lives, intersections of poverty, and I was also very interested in feminism in Latin America. Hmm. It was something I was intellectually curious about, though when I graduated, I got a job at a nonprofit and sort of fell in love with working in the nonprofit sector and found their ability to do that kind of service that I was sort of brought up and taught was important to do.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Martha Stahl, CEO and President of Planned Parenthood of Montana. So what was the nonprofit work you did in Texas?
So I worked at Safe Place, which is a very large sexual assault and domestic violence survival center in Austin. And I worked there, actually it was my first job in development and fundraising, which quite frankly was terrifying, but the idea of raising money for an organization that provided help to people in crisis, particularly victims of domestic and sexual violence, was very fulfilling. And I learned it was a pleasure to raise money for something that you care deeply about.
You indicate you were in development raising funds. Did you have any interaction with any of the victims of domestic violence?
I didn't, but I worked very closely with our program staff because we all work together in the same building. And the thing that I was most impressed with in terms of the work they did was the education work.
Meaning what?
A Safe Place is one of the leaders in the country, actually, for educating youth and families in curriculum around healthy relationships and maintaining boundaries and being able to, you know, articulate what it is that you need and want in a relationship. And so I was always drawn to the education programs that they offer, both in terms of prevention, but also work with their existing clients.
We've done a couple of shows on domestic violence and centers, and I don't remember hearing that there's preventative education that is tested and presumably effective, but that is your experience.
Yes, yeah. So the education work that they did was usually with teenagers, teaching teenagers early on about how to express themselves in relationships and ask for what it is, what they need and what they want, and also how to say no to things that they're not interested in and or are not happy with, which I think is huge as young people develop and grow, their ability to have those healthy relationships. And I think that was an early on place that I became interested in the work that Planned Parenthood did. So having worked at Safe Place for several years, I was very interested in doing fundraising and working with organizations that help women, as well as men and youth, be able to be decision makers and take control of their own lives. When I was at Safe Place, that was the best thing to see. We had a transitional housing unit that was next door to our administrative offices. So you would see the clients over time evolve and become ready to move out on their own and start small businesses and see their lives transformed in that way.
So why Planned Parenthood?
So Planned Parenthood, I believe, does that same empowering work in a different way. So I truly believe that women and men's control over their own health care allows them to do all of the things they want to do in their lives. When I talk about Planned Parenthood, I like to talk about Planned Parenthood being the place that opens the door to dreams and possibilities for our patients. When we think about, for example, a young person coming to an education program and learning about healthy relationships with a Planned Parenthood educator, that sets that young person up to be able to be an advocate for themselves in their life, to have healthy relationships with the people they go on to date or marry and become family with. And in the same way, the healthcare services we provide allow people to be empowered to move on with their education, to postpone childbearing until they're ready, and then to have healthy pregnancies and healthy babies once they decide they are ready to have children.
Let's break that down. My sense was from what you said that part of your educational outreach is not health-focused. Mm-hmm. You talked about the young person making decisions That's a surprise to me. Help me understand that component of your program.
Our sexual and reproductive health and our sexual lives, which we all lead from the time we're born until we die, are more than just our physical bodies and what happens to our reproductive organs. Our sexual health is about self-esteem. It's about our ability to express what we want, what we desire. It's about our ability to take control over our own bodies and to be aware of what our bodies are and how they behave and what's normal and what's not normal, and our ability to be able to talk to medical providers and healthcare professionals about
those issues. So how does Planned Parenthood, I'm 13 years old, 14, yeah. Tell me in a nutshell about how the program works. How do you find the kids?
Sure.
What age? What's the forum, group, individual, whatever?
So our education programs are pretty broad, a broad spectrum. They're all age appropriate, and we like to think of them all as being comprehensive. And when I say comprehensive, what I really mean is that they are they're based in abstinence and making sure that teenagers and young people understand strongly that abstinence is the best way to avoid pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections. But that's not where it ends. That's where it begins. So we want to make sure that the youth understand both the importance of understanding their own values, but also understanding the medical component of that. So we have a blend of many of our programs. We'll spend a lot of time on self-esteem, on how to have a healthy relationship, about, for older teens, how to negotiate conversations about things like sexuality with parents, with boyfriends, girlfriends.
How do you get the clients to talk to? Is this in schoolrooms? Is this what?
We do education programs in schools across the state of Montana. We have a very active Native American outreach program, which works in schools on Crow Reservation. We also do educational programs at youth development organizations. We work with rehab facilities. Really wide scope of organizations, and not all of our education clients are children. We also work with adults to help them learn the same skills around managing their health care. And we do also do some one-on-one, and our educators spend some time as well working directly with parents and helping parents figure out how to have these conversations with their kids. It's what parents want to do, and we believe that parents are really the primary and best educators of their kids. It's from our parents that we get our values and our beliefs around sexuality, and so it's really important that parents feel prepared to talk about those things. But many parents, myself included, I'm a parent, don't necessarily feel comfortable having
sure.
those conversations.
If someone wants your guidance, I mean, is this normally they are talking to an individual counselor? Are there evening programs you put on? Help me understand how it works in simple terms.
Sure. So we do a little bit of both. We have our educators who go out to organizations, but they will also do one-on-one conversations with parents, with people who have questions.
So overall in Montana, how many staff do you have? And if you could give us a breakdown of categories.
We have about 70 staff currently. The large bulk of that staff, about 40 of those staff, work in our health centers providing services. So that includes our clinic assistants who greet patients, who work on doing charts and testing and that sort of thing, our nursing staff, as well as our nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and doctors who work for us. So that's the majority of our staff, are those health center staff who provide those direct services. And then we have three full-time staff who work on advocacy and grassroots organizing throughout the state. And then we have five staff who are full-time working in the education department providing programming.
And your health care centers are where?
So we have two health care centers in Billings. We have one in Helena, one in Great Falls, and one in Missoula.
And maybe you could give us a little bit of understanding about the scope of the national organization, which I understand has a similar structure to the one in Montana.
Yeah, that's right. So the national organization is Planned Parenthood Federation of America. So Planned Parenthood of Montana is an affiliate of the national organization. So we meet certain standards and guidelines in order to use the Planned Parenthood name. There are about 60 Planned Parenthood affiliates throughout the country and 700 health centers.
So it's a big outfit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Martha Stahl, President and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Montana. Now let's go to some of the controversial issues that I raised at the beginning of the show, the polarization around contraception and abortion in general, and what's happened recently. There's been a lot of controversy, sort of a lightning rod dynamic around videos that were secretly shot, as I understand it, false pretenses in the sense that someone said they were interested as a medical research institution in buying fetal tissue, and they filmed discussions with Planned Parenthood staff. I've screened a few of those, and they seem to show Planned Parenthood talking about selling fetal tissue for medical research purposes. Fair?
I don't think that's fair. I think the key words there were buying and selling.
Okay.
So when Planned Parenthood affiliates, and there's very few that do, and here in Montana we don't, but when Planned Parenthood affiliates have fetal tissue donation programs, they are...
What is a fetal tissue donation program?
Sure. Some women, after they seek abortion care, would like to have something come out of what may be a very difficult decision for them. And so this has largely been a patient-led initiative where patients have asked if there is something that they can do with the fetal tissue after they have an abortion that can help science. And so the few Planned Parenthood affiliates that have fetal tissue donation programs have relationships with research institutions where after the abortion, the tissue is donated for the use in that research. So when Planned Parenthood or any other organization that can provide fetal tissue does so, they are allowed to recoup their expenses. So it's a reimbursement of expenses. It is not a sale. The costs that are involved include processing and shipping and packaging. They're not insignificant. And so the law allows that any physician, not just Planned Parenthood, working on any kind of tissue donation is allowed to recoup their expenses. And so I think what was seen in those videos were what Planned Parenthood staff thought were conversations about covering those expenses, as opposed to a negotiation around a sale. Okay. There is no sale of fetal tissue happening.
And that would be illegal.
It would be illegal. And in states where this has been investigated, Planned Parenthood has found to do no wrongdoing. And in fact, I believe that we go above and beyond what the federal regulations around this are.
And help me understand the purpose of someone paying the costs and obtaining fetal tissue is what? What do they do with the fetal tissue?
Fetal tissue research has been going on for many, many years in this country. And in fact, that research has impacted almost all of us in some way. Some of the vaccines that we use regularly were derived from research on fetal tissue donation. There are big research projects going on right now around ALS, Parkinson's disease, heart disease that all involve fetal tissue. This is really important life-saving medical research that has impacted all of us in our lives in some way and will hopefully actually impact more people in the future as we work to find cures and treatments for these diseases.
Now, fetal research or research with fetal tissue is also seriously controversial. Is that fair?
I think it's fair, but I also think it's important to know that it was under the Reagan administration that laws were passed around this with the recognition that this research really is tremendously important to science and to healthcare. And so it was with that understanding that those regulations were developed.
For some women, having an abortion is a very serious emotional experience and decision. What does Planned Parenthood do in relation to counseling for women who come in looking for an abortion and your specialists get the sense there's a serious question here for them?
Mm. I think that it's important to recognize that decisions around pregnancies, whether it's the decision to become pregnant, whether it's the decision to end a pregnancy or to continue a pregnancy, are decisions that have deep, deep impacts on the lives of women and their families. And at Planned Parenthood, we truly believe that that is a decision that should be made by the woman if she is a person of faith, We think that if she would like to and she wants to consult someone in her religion, that can be very helpful. We think there's a place for a conversation with medical providers, but we really recognize the ability of women to make these decisions. And we have found that many women who come in seeking abortion care know what it is that they want to do. They've made that decision before they walk in our doors. A lot of times we'll counsel women about how they want to go about having the procedure, about talking to their families about it, making sure that they have the support systems in place. And for some women, as I said, it is a really difficult, difficult decision. We do see patients who are ending very much wanted pregnancies, and that can be very difficult for them. And then we have other patients who know from the moment they find out that they're pregnant that they are not in a position to become a parent, and it's a very clear, simple decision for them.
Okay, my specific question was, when you have a woman who is having problems emotionally around the issue, what do you do about it?
If we have a patient who is unsure or who is having trouble with her decision, we give her as much time as she needs to make that decision, and we'll encourage her to go talk to whoever it is that she needs to talk to. So sometimes that's as simple as sitting with one of our staff and just talking again about what her options are. And sometimes it comes to referring her out either to a counselor or encouraging her to talk to people in her family, in her life, at her church, wherever she gets her support.
Okay, so do I understand correctly then that you do not provide counseling services for those women, other than on a medical explanation, but on the emotional side, you would refer those people to somebody else?
We don't want to be in a position where a patient isn't positive about her decision, about any of our medical issues. So all of our counseling is very non-directive, and sometimes patients want things to be a little bit more directive, and that's not something that we do. We're very clear that our counseling is really about these are the things that you should think about, but we don't tell patients what they should think or how they should make their decision.
For opponents of abortion, generally speaking, I think the argument would be it's the taking of a human life. That's a powerful statement.
Mm-hmm.
What's Planned Parenthood's position on that philosophical, moral question?
Our organizational position is the same as my personal position, which is that is a very personal decision. It's based in many things. For some folks, their idea of when human life begins is based in their religious tradition. For some, it's based in their perception of science. And our belief is that really that's a decision that should be made by nobody other than the patient. And quite frankly, what people believe about when life begins is only part of the decision to either end or continue a pregnancy.
Let's talk about that one element of the decision. You say it's only one. It is clearly one. Does Planned Parenthood accept or not that human life begins at conception?
Our understanding of the science is that the implantation of the embryo in the uterine wall, implantation, is really the beginning of a pregnancy, and that happens after conception.
Okay.
In terms of
just roughly, when does that? I'm not a pregnancy specialist.
Sure.
When does that take place?
It can happen within a couple of days of fertilization.
Okay. So at that point, is it then Planned Parenthood's position that we are talking about not a complete human life, but human life?
Well, we like to talk about it as a pregnancy. And here is what I'll say about that. As a woman who has been pregnant in her life several times, a pregnancy is truly defined by the woman who is going through that. When I became pregnant with my children, I knew the moment I was pregnant that these were my children, because I was looking to become pregnant and I wanted to become a mother. But I also had an unintended pregnancy and I sought abortion care for that. And it was not the same. It was a different situation. And I think what we do at Planned Parenthood is we meet women where they are in all of the complexity of our lives. And the understanding that we all come to decisions around abortion from very different places. It's a deeply personal decision that takes into account many different things, not just when life begins, not just religion, but economics and family dynamics. And so To some extent, it's not our place to say when life begins.
It may not be your place to say. The Supreme Court has established women have a constitutional right to abortion under specific circumstances, and that the state has a right to intervene on the behalf of protecting human life. So at some point across that continuum of conception to what your point was, to implantation, to viability of the fetus, I think just from a scientific standpoint, not taking away from anything you've said, it's hard to argue that this is not human life in the sense that a turtle egg is a turtle egg, not a human egg, and that because it's human life, there are profound moral issues. Now, you're saying, if I understand you correctly, that it is your personal and organizational position that the best place to make those profound moral decisions is the woman. Do I understand that correctly?
It's absolutely correct.
At the top of the show, I pointed out that this is a highly polarizing issue generally, and has been a spike around these videos and a lot of political hardball. What's going on in terms of American public opinion?
I think it's very interesting to look at where the political game is played and on what field. And the conversation that we're having now, which is around defunding Planned Parenthood and shutting down the government, is really about family planning and access to reproductive and contraceptive services, which to me is not controversial at all. In fact, 99% of sexually active women have used birth control at some point in their lives.
Just, I have to jump in. When you say the controversies about it, means that's where the federal funding goes. It doesn't go to your abortion
services.
That's
right. So the idea that defunding the Title X services and taking Planned Parenthood's funding away in many ways does nothing to get at the root of the issue, which is why we have unintended pregnancies in this country.
Question was public opinion.
Because so many people use a contraception, poll after poll over the last few weeks has found that Planned Parenthood is seen as highly favorable, and that the American public does not think that defunding Planned Parenthood is the right thing to do or something that Congress should be spending their time on. So there was a Quinnipiac poll, a CBS poll. All of these polls found that more than 60% of Americans felt that Planned Parenthood should keep their funding.
Martha Stahl, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
To our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. We'll